Nikki Haley promised.
I will not, not now, not ever, support raising the gas tax.
Really?
Of all the Republicans running for president, why is Donald Trump only attacking Nikki Haley? Because Trump knows Haley's the only one who can beat him.
He doesn't know it's a damn show. He thinks it's a damn fight.
Welcome to the New Hampshire Journal podcast. I'm your host, Michael Graham, managing editor at nhjournal.com. Well, you heard it there from one of the greatest political movies of all time, Rocky. He doesn't know it's a damn game. He thinks it's a damn fight. And Nikki Haley has been convinced that this run for president of the United States is a fight. And she's in it. And Donald Trump is throwing down. And all I got to say is, from a pure political junkie standpoint, thank you. Thank you. Finally, something to cover. You know, I mean, when everyone's in single digits and Trump's at 612, you know, it's just, you know, you always have to drop back to, I love all the conversations, including some we've had here on the New Hampshire Journal podcast. Well, if you set aside Trump, which once again is kind of like, you know, being in Rocky Balboa's corner and saying, well, if you set aside Apollo Creed, well, there is no setting aside Apollo Creed. And so now we're going to see what happens. And we have two great people to guide us through the conversation. One of them, CBS News pollster, my old colleague at CBS News, Anthony Salvanto, who they had the poll that got everyone talking. It's the one with Nikki Haley at 29%. And so we're going to talk about what he sees when he looks at these numbers here in New Hampshire. That's right, 29% in New Hampshire, for those of you who have not been tracking this. So he's going to join us, have a great conversation. And then after you get data, we're going to go to wild, uninformed punditry with longtime New Hampshire Republican Fergus Cullen. And yes, he's a Republican. I heard you. Don't say that. Former chair of the party, definitely on the moderate side, and a longtime observer of New Hampshire politics, and he has some interesting insights. The big question that every political junkie has to ask is, can Trump lose? Can Trump be stopped? It's the question people have been asking since the indictments changed the race. And I think for the first time, you can make an argument that he can. And that's kind of what Fergus Cullen walks us through later in the podcast. That's not the same thing as he will, or, you know, the odds are good or whatever. But, you know, what were the odds that Rocky Balboa could fight Apollo Creed to a standstill? They were very small. Okay, that's fiction. But, you know, I mean, look, there have been races in the past where people have surprised. There have been surprises. No one thought early on, in the wake of the 9/11 attacks, that a unknown half a first term U.S. senator named Barack Hussein Obama would become the first black president of the United States. And they thought he had no chance of getting past Hillary Clinton. The whole spin buzz, the smart people were saying, he's just running to establish himself, you know, in American politics. He's running to, you know, to let people see him. And then, you know, after Hillary's done, whatever, he'll be the heir apparent. And this is a great marketing tool. Run for, well, once again, Barack Obama and David Axelrod, a strategist who kicked my fanny in a race back in my youth, had a plan to win. And that's one of the things I think that Chris Christie says that people in the business really respond to, which is, if you're going to be in this race, you need to be in this race to win. And the people they have in mind, one is Vivek Ramaswamy. I think that's a separate kind of candidacy. We'll set that one aside. We'll set him aside instead of Trump this time. But they point to Ron DeSantis. Was Ron DeSantis really in it to win it? I'll put it this way. It could be the case when this is all over, if Trump ends up winning the nomination and he ends up winning it with the kind of Trump coalition of voters making up about 60% of the vote, and that's where the Republican Party is, there'll be a strong argument to make that the only strategy that made any sense was the DeSantis strategy, which was to be the Trump adjacent alternative, so that if something happened, you'd be there and you'd be someone that people who love Trump could be comfortable voting for. And then people who, well, they're not so great on Trump, but, you know, good leader, got experience, did a good job in Florida. That could end up being the smartest theory. It's just, you know, no theory survives. It's the first punch in the face, or, you know, the first encounter with the enemy. That's how these things work. Or it could be the case that there was always a group of voters out there who liked Trump, but were either pragmatic and thinking, I think we can do better as far as beating the Democrats, or were concerned about his, you know, issues in court, or were concerned about his negativity, unfavorable numbers. That's what I'm trying to say. Unfavorable numbers. Not his personal negativity, that's a separate issue, but, you know, the fact that no matter what you do, the concept of Donald Trump getting more than 48% of the popular vote, pretty unlikely. 46 is probably more realistic, and that's, you know, that creates its own problems. And so it could be the case that those voters, for all those different reasons, actually do represent a winning coalition inside the Republican primary. If you had to bet right now, I think the data would be you bet on the Trump majority as opposed to the let's move on majority, or the, you know, I'm done with him majority, or whatever you want to call it, the majority that Chris Sununu says is going to deliver a landslide for Nikki. He really said she's going to win in a landslide. Now, he also backed off that on the Drew Klein radio show, explaining that, well, if all of the independents showed up and voted, and if all the unaffiliateds, everybody, you had 100% turnout, then he's confident she would win in a landslide. And maybe so, but that's not going to happen. So anyway, dealing with reality, we're just looking at the math. And other thing I will say is, being from South Carolina, South Carolina is Trump country. Once again, that can change, you know, if Haley stuns everybody, kind of shift things around. There's a story this week about people courting Tim Scott. He may have 10% support in the state. And if he threw that 10% behind, say, Haley, that could give her enough to be competitive with Trump, possibly. Or if he threw it behind Ron DeSantis, he could keep DeSantis in the race till he gets to Florida, although I don't really understand how that would work. But, you know, this is why you play the games. And the new poll numbers for Haley, the first time Trump has not had a 20-point or more lead this year in the polls in the Real Clear Politics average, is this one poll from CBS. By the way, his average is still above 20. I think it's like 23 points. But is it a trend? We're going to watch. The Granite State gurus, if you go to nhjournal.com, the Granite State gurus say the Sununu endorsement is different from, say, the endorsement with Kim Reynolds in Iowa. Hey, one more thing before we get to the great conversations. That is the ruling from the Colorado Supreme Court saying, you know, Trump should be thrown off the ballot. He can't run. He's guilty of, of insurrection, and the state of Colorado should not allow him to appear. This has nothing to do with what happened on January 6th, which was awful. This is ridiculous. The idea that an individual state court is just going to decide, hey, we've decided who's eligible to be on the ballot for a federal election, is nonsense, particularly when they're not invoking state law. They're invoking federal law, an argument about the 14th Amendment that claims, they say, well, we can use the 14th Amendment to keep Trump off. And it's just ridiculous on its face. And this is what bothers me. It's yet another sign that nobody cares about the rules. It's all Calvin Ball all the way down. If you asked any of these judges over a beer, so you think individual states without a trial, remember, Trump was not tried. He wasn't tried in Colorado, that's for sure. You can just decide, yeah, what you did seemed a little insurrection-y to me. We're going to kick you off the ballot. It's idiotic. You can't have a national election that way. And so the judges know that what they're doing is garbage, but they're doing it because they're involved in the process of garbage as opposed to the process of governance. And so I don't know what all the motives are. People often have multiple motives. I got to say, if you're a Democrat in Colorado and you want Trump to lose, and you saw what happened when he was indicted and how it rallied people around him, and if you believe that Trump is a weak candidate, that his baggage will hurt him next November, blah, 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 you could definitely, that could be part of your motive to issue a ruling that you know the Supreme Court is just going to shoot down. And they're not going to shoot it down because it's the Roberts Court or the Alito Court. They're going to shoot it down because it's idiotic. You can't have Rhode Island say, you don't get to run, but you do. And, you know, Utah goes, yes, you do get to run, but you don't. Our democracy can't work this way. And this one, I'm just so tired of all of the, my democracy is in trouble whining. If your democracy was really in trouble, you would act like it. You might, for example, say, I'm not going to issue some idiotic, clearly not going to stand scrutiny ruling in order to make a point about how much I hate Donald Trump while I'm sitting here as the state Supreme Court member. If you really cared about democracy, you would stop calling Trump Hitler and fascist all the time, because you would pay attention to the fact that it doesn't work. Why? Because these same Democrats who are calling Trump Hitler fascist called George W. Bush McHitler fascist chimp, McChimp, whatever it was. And they called Mitt Romney, for crying out loud. When you're calling Mitt Romney Hitler and fascist, you obviously don't care about the connective tissue of our democracy. And if I lived in Colorado, I would happily sign a petition to remove these judges. Not because the judges went after Trump. I'd do the same thing if they said it about Hillary or Joe Biden or whatever. Look, I could argue right now that Joe Biden is violating the Constitution because he's ignoring a ruling from the Supreme Court on student loan debt. He is. He clearly is. He has broken the law repeatedly while he's been president. And I don't mean Hunter Biden stuff. I mean actual governance stuff. Doing things that he knows are illegal and then having the courts finally block them and then doing them partially anyway. But I don't want the system to be some judge in some state makes this decision. And if you care, if you really do care, you don't want it either, whatever your team membership is. So there's that. Something else that rises above all partisanship, a great smile. You're running for office. You work in sales. You're on the dating scene. I mean, you just want to be happy. You want to be happy with your smile. I don't want you to have a great smile. I want you to have a perfect smile. That's why you should see my dentist, Dr. Bruce Houghton, at perfectsmiles.com. He does a magnificent job of transforming your smile, transforming your look. And for some people who I've talked to, because I've met a bunch of Dr. Bruce's patients, he's helped transform their lives. And so, you know, whether you want just like a little minor smile tune-up or if you need major cosmetic surgery, whatever it is, before you make a final decision, talk to Dr. Bruce, Dr. Bruce Houghton, right in Nashua, Perfect Smiles of Nashua, perfectsmiles.com. He will do a fantastic job. He is a great guy. He and his wife, Stephanie, run the business. And they're just terrific people, so you can trust them and everything you say, they tell you. And maybe you want something that doesn't really make sense, or maybe you want to do something and the price doesn't match the outcome. He will tell you all of that. Just check him out on the web, perfectsmiles.com, or go visit him in Nashua, Dr. Bruce Houghton at perfectsmiles.com. It is always a delight to welcome one of America's great holsters to the show. But unfortunately, we have Anthony Salvato with the CBS. I'm kidding. I love you. I love you. You know that. We had the chance to work together at CBS for several years, and I was really impressed by your professionalism. And I got to tell you, in New Hampshire, you have got people's eyebrows up into their foreheads with this number showing Nikki Haley making it a race in the Republican primary.
Hey, Michael, great to join you. Look, hey, this is the voice of the voters, right? So right. You got in New Hampshire, the big picture is Donald Trump still leads.
Right.
And he leads with 44%. People think his voters think he's a strong leader. His voters think he can beat Joe Biden. But the lead story, to your point, has been the movement for Nikki Haley in right. What you might consider the sort of non-Trump or Trump alternative searching voter. And she's at 29% now, and that's up substantially from where she was back in the fall. And the reasons, and I always emphasize, you know, understand the reasons people are shifting or moving, is that first, people describe her as prepared for mm-hmm. the presidency and on a par even with the former president. So that's notable. And then the second part of that is that she is described as reasonable, more so than the other candidates that are competing in that lane, if you will. And she's at 51% on that. So two reasons there. And I think that describes, again, this dynamic where we know that the former president leads as he does nationally. We know that he has a very solid base and a floor of support. But there is that group out there, It's not a sizable, but there is a number of candidates fighting for it. And right now, Haley is sort of becoming that key alternative or main alternative, if you will, to Trump, Michael.
Okay, so some big picture stuff for Anthony Salvante with CBS News polling. One is, would you, in this current climate, would you rather be way ahead on strong leadership where Trump is, or way ahead on likability, the old, you know, do you want to have a beer with them, which used to be the coin of the realm?
Well, let's put a pin in that. Okay. Used to be, right? And I think you describe an important dynamic, which is, what is it that voters rank as a top criteria for choosing a candidate? You can see just in the numbers here that the candidates who are seen as likable to the extent any of them are described that way is not necessarily the same order in which, you know, people have standing and vote. So,
but I have to interrupt right there. You just point out something that I had not really noticed before, which is this crew of candidates, they're impressive in a lot of ways. Governor DeSantis has an impressive record and electoral success. Haley, obviously, her two jobs, you know, Christie, et cetera. But they really aren't the kind of hail fellow, well-met crowd of, you know, hey, let's go to the tiki bar and listen to some Buffett, are they? They're kind of more, whether you want to choose the word serious-minded or kind of hard to like. That is an astute observation, sir.
Well, look, you know, the voters are making these decisions based on an assortment of criteria. And we know that voters rank problems like the economy, like for a lot of Republicans, the border and immigration as very serious things. So this may or may not be the time when they're evaluating candidates on that metric. And here's another thing, which is rather typical for a party that's not in the White House at the time. They're trying to game it forward to the general and pick a candidate they think can win. And we've seen this before in either party. And so the fact is that Donald Trump stands out as the candidate they think has the best chance to beat Joe Biden.
Right.
And that could, you know, be the overarching criteria, and in fact seems to be a big important part of this as well, right? We've got fully half of voters saying not just that they think Donald Trump has a chance to beat Joe Biden, but that he definitely in their minds will beat Joe Biden. So again, your party out of power, there's various different ways you can evaluate a set of candidates. That's where they are.
That's a great point. So 51% definitely think Trump would win. 32% definitely think Haley would win, which is interesting, by the way, given some of the recent head-to-heads we've seen between Haley and Trump. Biden. Haley tends to do a little better than Trump. DeSantis at 27%. You also mentioned in the same poll that New Hampshire's more moderate electorate helps Haley. And I've already gotten some pushback from NH Journal readers who say, what is he talking about? This shows they're out of touch. The party in New Hampshire isn't the old, you know, green eye shade, you know, squish Republican party. It's we're conservatives up here. You're just wrong. Why do you describe the electorate on the Republican side as more moderate?
Well, you raise a good point about what we mean by moderate. Mm-hmm. And in this case, you're talking about, yes, a very conservative, at least on policies that we're measuring, very conservative electorate among the Republicans. And you've also got the potential influx, as often happens in the New Hampshire primary, of independents who are not as far to the right as their fellow, you know, New Hampshireites who are Republicans. So that has an overall moderating effect on the electorate as a whole. And what's notable about that is that it's the independents, and many of them more self-identified conservatives or you know, a little more centrist on some issues. But once they're in the electorate there, they're telling us that they're by and large a little more amenable to the idea of a candidate who, if not Donald Trump, would be different from Donald Trump. So
a couple things there, Anthony. One is, when next time we get you up here to New Hampshire, so I can take you out and buy you a beverage, don't say New Hampshireites. They take it very personally. It's always Granite Staters. I learned that the hard way when I first moved up here. And the second thing is, you know, as you know, the non-affiliateds in New Hampshire are actually overwhelmingly Republicans and Democrats who, for whatever reason, don't want to wear that label when they register to vote. Are you seeing that across the country, a shrinkage of the true, what people mean when they say independence, which is, yeah, sometimes I vote the Republican and sometimes I vote the Democrat, and it's really hard to predict which one I'm going to do?
It's not necessarily voting, because when you look a little deeper at people who call themselves independents, you find that a substantial number of them, in fact, vote the same way all the time.
Right.
So some of it is a conception that, or of oneself, to say, yes, I could be independent or I could fall either way. And they come by that honestly. That's just fine. They may be evaluating things, but the fact is, they will tell you, and then you can even see this in the vote patterns, that they come down on the same side all the time. And so that's one of the things I tell people, which is, once you see that label on someone, don't assume swing voter. Don't assume, or don't conflate the idea of independent with swing voter necessarily. And that's an important part of our current political dynamic.
So I have one more horse race question, then the big picture stuff. Looking at the horse race stuff, based on your previous observations of elections, I mean, the fact is, a 15-point lead is still a 15-point lead. That seems kind of big. But I've had some smart people say, no, not in a primary. In a primary, swings of 15 points, you know, definitely can happen. At the same time, you also have this odd situation of a semi-incumbent with Donald Trump, someone that Republican primary voters have voted for, if you add up the primary in general, four times now, many of them in the past. So I guess what I'm trying to ask is, how elastic do you think, generally speaking, this Republican primary electorate is?
Well, you said an interesting word there, Michael, which is incumbent. And even what we see in the polling for the former president is that a lot of the measures of him profile like an incumbent for voters. For example, people say one reason they're voting for him is that they know him well. People say among his voters, another reason they're voting for him is that they think things were better under him, right? Now, that kind of retrospective voting analysis is the kind of thing you see when people evaluate someone in office, i.e. an incumbent. So there is a certain incumbency effect to Donald Trump standing in this, right, that can't be dismissed. And it is an important part of what's underpinning him in the minds of a lot of Republicans. So, yes.
But is the electorate elastic, when we're in this primary, or are they set in their ways, generally speaking? And
I think Donald Trump appears to have a floor, which is to say that he's got people voting for him. He's got a substantial number of people who say they will only consider him. Mm-hmm. And that limits the elasticity to some degree. Having said that, the other candidates, when you look at cross consideration, which is to say, we ask people who they're considering, and they can consider any or all of them, you see some cross consideration, for example, between Chris Christie's voters and Nikki Haley's voters or considerers. Mm. And I think when you see that cross consideration, then you would look and say, yes, there is still some, certainly some room for candidate movement. There's right. certainly some dynamic in there in which, especially in the non-Trump group, there could be some moving around. And right. I think my look at the campaigns as they're playing out seems to reflect they might think the same thing, Michael.
And of course, the working theory is that for candidates like Ron DeSantis and Vivek Ramaswamy, who've embraced some of the Trump worldview, if they get out of the race, their voters are likely to take a very strong look at Trump. Is that a reasonable theory?
When you look at the cross consideration, to the degree that anyone is considering, someone other sure. than Trump, there is cross consideration between DeSantis and Trump, certainly. And so, I mean, he's been talking that way. And I think the campaign probably reflects that. And I think, yes, you also see that.
So last question, I really appreciate your time. It's the big picture question, your take on the standing of polling. And I will say that 2022 really threw me for a loop because we had a lot of metrics in the past. For example, U.S. Senate candidates had never performed 5% better than the approval rating of their own party's president in a midterm. And we had it happen, I think, 6 or 7 times. You know, there are a few exceptions to that, Susan Collins in Maine. But, you know, generally speaking, Senate candidates tended to do like their president did. And that was just blown up completely. You had terrible approval ratings for the incumbent president, and yet his party did just fine in the midterms, et cetera. And so I'm just curious, where do you think polling is today? Is it getting healthier? Are there more struggles that we've seen since the Trump era? Your diagnosis, Dr. Salvanto.
Well, polling is good, and ours, I hope you were watching it in 2022, because it would have told you exactly what was happening. So the fact is, we reported that if the Democrats got strong turnout from parts of their base, young people and others, that they could keep this close. And in fact, that's exactly what happened. And I think 2022 was a great example of the triumph of data and listening to people over punditry, in the sense that the punditry was, well, the economy is bad, therefore the party that's out of power is going to have huge gains. And that narrative, at least to my sort of read of it, started to take hold in some circles, whereas the good polling was telling you, well, hold on a second. The Democrats may have a shot at keeping this close, not necessarily winning, but keeping it close. And that was on the strength of issues like abortion, issues like concerns about democracy. And that was all there in the polling, but it's really the voice of the voter through the polling.
Right.
And so I think that the lesson, and we've seen this repeated many years, is if you actually listen to people and what they're telling you, then yeah, things that you think have happened in history before and are going to repeat themselves, you may find a new dynamic, which is the fun and exciting part of all of it.
And which is why we go to CBSnews.com to read your polling. My motto back when I ran campaigns was, what usually happens is what usually happens. And that would be kind of my guiding force, you know, playing the odds. And I will say that since 2015, I still say what usually happens is what usually happens, just not nearly as much. And that's the world we've been in, I feel like, since 2015.
Yeah. But we are, you know, there are a lot of dynamics that are changing right now. And that's something, again, where I would just urge people to take a hard look at what people are saying in the moment. And yes, history can be a guide, but it's not necessarily a predictor anymore.
Anthony Salvanto, CBSnews.com. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, Michael.
So you've just heard the informed analysis of a professional pollster from CBS News. Now you're going to get the uninformed rantings of a couple of Granite State pundits. I'm handling the not particularly informed part. Fergus Cullen is going to enlighten me with his far more in-depth knowledge of what the heck is going on around here as a former chairman of the New Hampshire State Republican Party. Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Michael, longtime listener, first-time caller.
By the way, you missed a great party at Castro's with all of the New Hampshire Journal troublemakers. And your name was taken in vain several times. You need to know that.
I was so uncool, I wasn't even invited. But thanks for letting me know.
Oh, no. You didn't get an invite? Sorry. I'm just doing this to rub it in. It's really painful.
Happens to me a lot, Michael.
I'm sure it does. I saw your invitation, and I quickly burned it before I got it to the mailbox. No, I'm kidding. But it was great. And thank you to everybody who's helped us out this last year in New Hampshire Journal. You've been terrific. The Granite State guru has peered into the future from here with, you know, less than 5 weeks to go, and sees what appears to be a ceiling for Nikki Haley. And I've talked to people who hate her. I've talked to people who love her. And the thing I'm getting from across the board, Fergus, is people are impressed by the campaign that she's run, that she's done a great job. The question they have is, how far can it take her? So where are you on that view.
Sure. I mean, I've seen Nikki Haley out on the stump three times this year, once in about March, once in July before the debates, and then most recently, just a couple weeks ago in Meredith. And one thing that really stood out was how consistent her stump speech has been the whole year long. I mean, she is sticking with her script, and it's worked for her. You know, here we approach the end of the year, and she has achieved what every candidate wanted to achieve at the beginning of the year, which is to emerge as the main alternative to Trump late in the cycle. And she's done that. So congratulations. She's got her shot. Now we're about to find out, can she take a punch? Because she and Donald Trump have basically had some kind of mutual non-aggression pact.
Sure.
And just like Stalin and Hitler, someone's going to break it. And it's going to happen right now.
And there you go, ladies and gentlemen. It took us less than 90 seconds to get to the first Hitler reference from Fergus Cullen. Fantastic.
I'm talking about
I'm kidding.
I'm talking about historical non-aggression pacts.
You know, dude, you can't pitch a softball like that around me. Come on, I'm going to grab it. But I'm going to talk about the consistency part, because I agree. I've talked to some people who've said, in fact, just today, she's really gotten a lot better on the stump. And I just don't agree, because I think she's been fine on the stump from the beginning. She's a pleasant person. She's run for statewide office down in South Carolina, which, by the way, South Carolina politics makes New Hampshire politics look like a long, warm hug from your masseuse. I mean, it is so brutal. And she, you know, pulled it off, and she's got chops, and she has focused on what she thinks is her winning message from the beginning, which is to blend foreign policy and being the governor of a conservative state. And that's how she pitches her conservatism without trying to, you know, kind of roam out into the more MAGA wing of things. She just talks about South Carolina, and I'm with you, Fergus. She has been consistent. She's delivered. You walk out of the room knowing what she wants you to know. People think when I call her the Tracy Flick of 2024 that I mean it as an insult. I don't. If you saw the movie, Tracy Flick won. And Tracy Flick did not have, you know, the skills that Nikki Haley has.
Oh, Election is a great movie. Everyone should watch it. And if you thought that Matthew Broderick was great in Ferris Bueller, he's at least as good in Election. Great
warning,
plug.
No kids in the room, though, because you forget. I turned it on. I was like, oh, whoa, wait a minute. Whoa. So definitely not family friendly fare. So let me ask you this. What would your advice be, knowing what you know about New Hampshire primary voters? What would your advice be to Nikki Haley about how can she create a big enough coalition to, you know, get neck and neck, or maybe sneak past Donald Trump?
Well, you know, the fact is she can't do it on Republicans alone. She's going to have to make some kind of pitch to the unaffiliated voters. Mm-hmm. And, you know, let's go back. The model was probably 2000 when John McCain carried Republicans by 1 point. But what turned it into a rout was he won a disproportionate share of the unaffiliated voters who voted in disproportionate numbers in the Republican primary. On the Democratic side that year, you had Al Gore and Bill Bradley, neither one exactly charismatic candidates who were getting people excited. So all the independents, all the unaffiliated voters who wanted to play that year played in the Republican primary. Now, that similar dynamic could happen this time, because let's face it, no one is crossing the street to go out of their way to write in Joe Biden on the Democratic ballot if you're an unaffiliated voter. So I'm going to be watching for her. To what extent does she make that pivot? Mm-hmm. You know, the language she's using on abortion, for example, is certainly more nuanced and, you know, might have more appeal. One thing that she has not been talking about on the stump is her record on the Confederate flag. You know, let's remember that her decision to take down the Confederate flag was considered very courageous. It was something that gave her a lot of national appeal among Republicans, and it has been absent from her stump speech. She has been asked about it in a couple of occasions, and she has answered it, but it has not been something that she's been using as a selling point. But that is exactly the kind of thing, the exact kind of message that could be very effective in a general election, but also help her among unaffiliated voters in the New Hampshire primary.
Okay, you totally lost me now, as a guy who grew up in South Carolina and was there for the fight and urging my fellow South Carolinians to take the flag off the dome. How does that resonate in New Hampshire? Who I can feel my listeners going, what the heck, Fergus? No one gives a crap about that in New Hampshire.
Well, it depends how you tell the story, right? And again, if her goal is to try to appeal to unaffiliated voters, who, again, could almost be 50% of the electorate in the Republican primary, that is an avenue for her to talk to those voters. Now, I think DeSantis, as we start to write the pre-obituaries for DeSantis, I think one of the comments people will make is that they made a tragic strategic error in trying to out-Trump Trump, that if only they had tried to consolidate the maybe Trump or I voted for Trump before, but I'd like us to move on voters, that would have been a better strategy for him.
Right.
But that's not what he chose. And so, as Haley, you know, isn't going to try and out Trump Trump either. So she's getting a lot of the let's move on from Trump voters. She's starting to really dominate, I think, that part of the electorate, but it isn't enough. Now, I don't think she has to win New Hampshire. I think she has to come in a strong second and then get that one-on-one contest with Trump in South Carolina. Maybe she wins that, maybe she loses it, but that's what the goal has to be emerging from New Hampshire. And that means she doesn't have to win with respect to the governor's hopes that she will.
So you agree then with Governor Sununu, just setting aside his prediction that she's going to win a landslide, you agree that she doesn't have to win, that Trump can win Iowa, win New Hampshire, but if it's competitive, the race isn't over and it goes on to South Carolina.
Well, somebody has to have one-on-one, right? And
why?
Because it's a splintered field. If DeSantis survives, if Ramaswamy hangs on,
let me back up. I want to ask the question. I'm trying, and not very competently, I apologize, to ask, because I'm really interested in this, and this seems to be a dividing point in how smart people like you view the race. There are a bunch of people who say, look, you tell Republicans around the country, Trump won the first two contests. They're not going to say, he only won, New Hampshire by 7 points. They're just going to say, oh, okay, he's the nominee.
Oh, I don't disagree with you. I'm not saying it's a great shot. I'm saying it is the only shot. It'd be even better if she defeats Trump in New Hampshire. That's an outcome that I would love to see.
But you don't
see.
Think it's over if Trump wins the first two? You don't think that's it? That the whole party's going to say, we decided,
Part of it depends on how many candidates are still in the race. If Trump wins with a plurality and there are four or five candidates on the ballot, then, maybe not. You have to get it down to one-on-one. But, if Christie is still a candidate by the time of the New Hampshire primary, if Ramaswamy is still in, if DeSantis is still in, and we've got five candidates on the ballot in New Hampshire, then I think that second place really matters. If it's already at a one-on-one, then certainly somebody like Haley has to have a competitive second, I think.
So speaking of Chris Christie, you brought him up. You think the pressure on him to get out so that his votes can more easily transmit over to Haley is going to be huge if Iowa turns out to be a Trump win. Is that right?
Well, I think Christie has time. I don't think that there's any urgency in him getting out of the race. And, I think that he is delivering an important message, one that people need to hear, even if they don't want to hear it, that, we've got a former president who's facing 91 criminal indictments. If he is convicted of these, he won't even be allowed to vote because he will be a felon. And I think it's important for Republican primary voters to hear this. So I'm for Christie staying in the race, at least through Iowa. And there's going to be debates. Whether he'll be in them or not, I think, is an open question. So after the Iowa caucus results are in, I think that Christie's going to have to make a look inside and make a tough decision at that point based on the reality. Because if Christie is getting out of the race, I think it's clear those votes are not splintering. They aren't going some to Trump, some to Vivek, some to DeSantis. Almost all of those will probably go to Haley. Whereas if DeSantis gets out, I think it's reasonable to think that his vote splinters and not a few of them go to Trump.
So the anecdotal part, Governor Chris Sununu said very recently that he thinks the Christie votes are already coming to Haley, that, quote, it doesn't matter if Christie gets out or not. It's already happening. Are you seeing people who were Christie backing, maybe soft Christie or maybe even hardcore Christie voters who have now decided, pragmatically speaking, as Sununu argues, the only path forward if you don't want Trump to be the nominee is Nikki Haley?
Well, I saw Christie about 10 days ago at UNH, about 75 people there, you know, half of them students, half of them not students. You know, again, I'm someone who's sympathetic to Christie in a lot of ways, but I'm trying to be objective here. His crowds are not growing. He has not lit a spark among independent, unaffiliated voters who can vote in the Republican primary. And it's hard to see his numbers growing from sort of a pretty low ceiling of never Trumpers, including me. But I think that's the reality of it. But so I think, you know, those voters, almost all of them probably have Haley as their second choice. And if they do conclude that they're sympathetic to Christie, but their number one goal is to try and support whoever is the best chance to prevent Trump from being the nominee, yeah, I think they'll gravitate to whoever that candidate is, whether it's Haley or possibly, you know, somebody else. But it's almost certainly going to be Haley at this point.
Oh, so let's wrap up with some big picture talk. There's an argument that for the big picture is this is a Trump party. It just is. And so you can take Trump's vote and you can distribute it to him, DeSantis and Vivek. But it's all Trump and Trump adjacent. That's a solid 60%+ of where the Republican primary voters are. Is that an accurate reflection, your opinion, of the party?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it is, right? It is clearly Trump's party, in part because there's been selection bias. Like, people like me have stepped outside, and what's remaining is a Trump party. There's no question about it.
Well, and also people who've been pulled in because they liked his message, and they were, you know, a significant percentage of them were non-voters who, you know, they always saw the Republican Party as kind of the Mitt Romney party, and they're like, well, I know that's not me. You know, me and my buddies, you know. We ain't no Mitt Romneys, and now they like Trump. And so you got these new blue collar, you know, low motivation voters who are motivated to vote for Trump.
Oh, well, I think that's true. Look, it's 16 years ago, right around now, that I got elected as state party chairman. Mm-hmm. And the party is clearly very different and has changed completely. But look, the activists who were there for that time, the McCain Romney years, I mean, they've almost 100% turned over. I mean, some of them have gone with, you know, have converted from sort of mainstream establishment, old guard Republicans to the Trump ones, but almost all of them are brand new. And those folks were not active for McCain or Romney. They have come out because of Trump. And, you know, I accept that that's just the reality of it.
And then the last question is this. The gurus say that as of right now, it looks like Trump 46, Haley 30, DeSantis and Christie both at 9. And what's interesting to me is if you said Haley at 30, you know, a month ago, 6 weeks ago, certainly people would have went, wow, that's a great performance. I just wonder if it turns out to be Trump, whatever, wins Iowa, you know, not in a squeaker, but like a normal win. I'm not predicting any specific number, but, you know, nothing weird. You know what I mean? Like a solid, respectable win in Iowa. He wins by 15 points in New Hampshire, even though that Nick Haley 30 number looks great. It just seems, based on the fact that Republicans like Donald Trump, they've been comfortable with him, they continue to approve of him. It's just hard to believe that they're going to turn around at some point between South Carolina and Super Tuesday and go, yeah, but let's go on. Let's consider somebody else. I'm ready for a duality approach. It just feels like it's going to be, and that was the primary, and now we're on to the general.
Oh, I don't disagree with you. I mean, the vast majority of those who are at least open to looking at other candidates other than Trump, they still basically like him. They would still be perfectly content if he were the Republican nominee. Most of them voted for him twice, at least in the past. They aren't really against Trump. That's just an enormous tailwind that he has here. You know, people like to say that they're open to dating other people and such, but you know, the reality is they kind of like their old boyfriend.
So what is the number that Nikki Haley needs to get for this to be a win, or at least not a loss, for Governor Chris Sununu? Is there a number where it's a problem for him? And is there a number where people go, wow, that CNN contract looks closer every day?
Well, I think it's a little premature to get into the expectations game on what Haley's number is and whether it's good enough. I mean, I think if Haley finishes a solid second, a competitive second, that's going to be pretty impressive considering where she was a year ago. And, you know, we'll see. Like I say, what we're about to find out is whether Haley can take a punch. I mean, Trump, to his credit, has a much better team around him politically this time around. Look, they kneecapped Ron DeSantis 12 months ago, and he never recovered from that. But they haven't laid a glove on Haley until now. And, you know, to her credit, she's risen to the point where she's now on their radar. So it'll be interesting to see how they handle it. But it's also possible that he could discredit her over with, you know, lies, with a lot of paid advertising, with a couple of smears, and you know, her numbers could suffer as a result. Again, a lot of her supporters are people who were okay with Trump in the past too, and it's not like she's been going around saying that he's unfit for office. So you know, let's let Haley have this moment and see if she can make the most of it.
Fergus Cullen, you made the most of your moment here on the New Hampshire Journal podcast. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you, Michael. Take care.
Thanks so much for listening to this edition of the New Hampshire Journal podcast. Please find us on Twitter, New Hamp Journal, on Facebook, NH Journal, and of course at nhjournal.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. I'm Michael Graham with Inside Sources. Thanks again for listening.